right. Well, I got our little New Evangelical handouts again.
Maybe we'll start some over here. I don't know what's going to happen. I may do half of this tonight and half of it tomorrow. And if you listen really fast, then maybe I'll do all of it tonight in another session. I'm prepared to go either way. But I want you to turn in your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. And here is a phenomenal command of Scripture that seems impossible, that most of us aren't aware of, and that hardly any of us would think we could ever accomplish. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. Let me begin reading at the beginning of the chapter. It says, "Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands." There it is again, just like in Colossians. "That if any obey not the word, they may also without the word be won by the conversation of the wives." That's a great verse. Dr. Hudson used to tell the ladies in his church whose husbands were not saved, he'd say, "Don't you ever go home and tell your husband what I said." Now the preacher said, pastor said, you should have heard the pastor. He said, "Your husband will hate me and he doesn't even know me." He said, "Don't you do that." He said, "You go home and make the meals the way he likes them and keep the house the way he likes it and do everything the way he wants it. And if he comments on it, say, well, down at the church, they've been teaching me this." If they don't obey the word, they'll be won without the word by the conversation. The idea is the manner of life of the wives. "While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting of the hair, and of wearing of gold, and of putting on of apparel." Our Nazarene friends in the old days, Wesleyan holiness folks, would use this verse to say that women should not wear jewelry or makeup. It also says they should not wear apparel, then, if you're going to take that. Be careful, all right? But the contrast isn't what the big deal is, what you are on the outside. Who does what you are on the inside? Let it be the hidden man of the heart, and that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. There it is again, their own husbands. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Here's six verses of instruction to the wives. And one verse to the men. "Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge." Know what they are like and dwell with them according to that knowledge. "Giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel." "And as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." I want to talk to you this evening, the Lord helping me, for a little bit about how to understand your spouse. Dwell with them according to knowledge. Lord, guide me by your Spirit and help me to say all and only the things that you want said. Help me know if I should try to run through the entire session or save some for tomorrow. And then, Lord, I pray that we'd take the things that we've so wonderfully heard from Brother Gray, clearly based on your word, a pattern that was established at the very beginning of marriage and the first marriage that we can learn from, and put them in practice in our lives. We sure thank you for meeting with us and trust you to do that. In Jesus' name, amen. I like what Brother Gray said about faults. I've said sometimes there are three levels of love. The first level is you love people thinking they have no faults. You meet the guy, you start dating, and you tell your mother, "Oh, he is just perfect. Wow, I found the perfect girl," the guy says. Then you learn that they have faults, and so the second level is you love them in spite of their faults. And that's not bad. Very few people get beyond that level. But the final level is you love them with their faults. You recognize the faults are a part of who they are and a part of what you love in other areas. I would be more of a risk taker than my wife. She'd be more conservative than I am. She would say when we left the room, "Do you have the key?" She'd always say, "Do you have the key?" And sometimes I think, "Honey, I preach out 60 or 65 times a year. I stay in motels all the time. You're not there most of the time. And I remember the key at least half the time without you being there to help me." But you know, I like that side of her. That's the side of her makes her plan things. You wouldn't believe all the wonderful things she did for our children, for special activities for the family, all the details that she went into. And that's the same part of it. Now, I wouldn't want to leave out the part that occasionally could irritate me. "Did you remember this? Did you do that?" To lose the other good part. I liked what he said. He had a lot of good things. I liked the business about questions. Questions stir the conscience. Accusations harden the will. God wasn't seeking information when he asked Adam and Eve those questions. He was stirring their conscience. Excellent stuff. Now, I'm going to give you some things tonight that are based on science, and you do not have to believe them. But you do have to obey the Bible command to dwell with your spouse according to knowledge. Somebody gave me a book one time. It said, "What a Man Can Do to Understand His Wife." And I opened the book, and every single page was blank. True story, right? Yeah, he gave it to me in Lexington, Kentucky. In fact, it was at the Clay's Mill Road Baptist Church before Brother Fugit went there. And we kind of just think, you know, we'll never figure it out. How many of you, don't raise your hand, but you can just answer this internally. How many of you ever thought, why in the world do they think that? How come they are that way? What made them like that? So, if you want to follow the outline, Roman number one, there are differences. One of the greatest myths of the 20th and 21st centuries is that there's essentially no difference between men and women. Right. So now, in spite of the objections of the Marines, who actually did a study on the subject, women will be allowed to go into combat. Isn't that lovely? Aren't you glad you're going to have equal rights to be shot and taken prisoner? It's just a marvelous thing in our society. But they're already saying if that's going to work, especially for the elite units, they're going to have to change the tests. You know what? If a woman wants to be a firefighter, I don't care. I wouldn't recommend that to our ladies from our spiritual basis, but secular society, I don't care. But she ought to be able to do as many push-ups as a man, because you know what? When there's a fire, you can't suddenly make yourself 50 pounds lighter if she needs to carry you down the ladder. But we know there's differences. We're trying to pretend we're all the same. Women do anything man can do, man can do anything women do. But here's some physical differences. This is the science, is what I found out when I studied a little bit. So letter A is physical difference, number one under that. About 7 weeks after conception, the brain of a male body is bombarded with about 10 times the amount of testosterone that the female receives. About the 8th week in the womb, the female baby gets a large dose of estrogen. Because of that, men tend to be aggressive and competitive. Women tend to be nurturing and caring. You ask a man, "How was the trip?"
"It was great. Made 11 hours, 32 minutes, averaged 23.4 miles a gallon, to 4 miles a gallon, and never stopped but one time." "That's a good trip." I say, "How's the trip?" "Oh, it was wonderful. We stopped. There was a little sign that talked about this coffee shop. And we went down there and they sold antiques. And then we saw this. We had a nice time." All right? Women want to enjoy the journey. Men want to conquer the road. Okay? They're just different that way. About 16 weeks, number two, under physical differences, about 16 weeks after conception, the male baby receives a biochemical bath that severs most of the connectors between the right and left side of the brain. Those they would transmit brain waves from the right side to the left side, and a male baby, most of them are gone. So that means that the man tends to solve problems with the left side of his brain and the woman with both sides of her brain. When Rush Limbaugh said he was talking to the world with one half of his brain tied behind his back, he was right. That's because he was a man, all right? There are mental differences that stem from these physical differences. Men tend to think logically, and women tend to think intuitively.
A man says, I don't trust that guy. A lady says, I don't trust that guy. You say to the man, why don't you trust him?
Well, he wasn't real straight about this, and he did this over here, and I saw that. I just don't trust him. You say to the lady, why don't you trust that guy? She says, there's just something about him. Something isn't right.
Now, let me tell you, intuition is not always wrong. We've all had flashes of intuition. About three times that I can remember, I was counseling a lady, and I had this thought come to mind, and I was a little hesitant, but I thought I should ask. I said, were you abused as a child? And they said, Pastor, how did you know? Do you know how I knew? I don't know. I had that thought. Now, not often. I'm not real good at it. But intuition is your mind working faster than you can explain. And because she's got those two sides connected, she's just going to go with something. When I was in school, we'd do long division. They'd always say, show your work.
They just want the right answer. They want to be able to tell how you got there. That's how a man's mind is. Women just gives you the answer.
Now, it's not always wrong. Ladies, it's not always right either. Okay? But there's a difference in how they think. Second mental difference. A man's mind, because he only got one half of it used at a time, is very focused. A man's mind is like laser. If I had a laser pointer, if I had a laser device into this pen, I'd aim it at that wall there and hold the button in, and there'd be one little red dot. All the energy in that device be focused in that tiny little dot. That's where man's mind is. Now, ladies, you need to understand this because we really can't do what you think we can. Really can't. A man will be sitting in the house. Wife will be gone somewhere. The children will be pouring red Kool-Aid on white carpet and shooting BBs at the brand new 50-inch television screen and putting the dog in the dryer and the cat in the microwave. And the wife will come home and say, honey, why didn't you make them stop that? He says, I didn't see it. She says, how could you not see it? They were right in front of you. And he says, I was reading the sports page. That's a legitimate excuse for a man. You're not going to believe this, ladies. Just take it by faith, okay? Here's what you do.
I'm on the phone. My wife says, oh, honey, come on. Where's Matt? And finally I say, just a minute, what? And she says, no, I didn't want him to know. I was young and asking. I can't do that. We cannot talk to them and talk to you and keep it all straight. We're like business.
A woman's mind is like radar. It's not like laser. A woman can be talking on the phone, cooking dinner, answering the front door,
and a child two rooms away will pick up something they shouldn't have, and she'll say, put that down right now. Anything within 100 miles comes up on the screen, and she gets it.
Right? Now, we're just different. I'm trying to help you dwell with them according to knowledge. That leads us to emotional problems. Men base their importance, their significance, on their ability to achieve results. I got it done. Yeah, I cut the wood and I stacked it and I like to look at the pile. I've been doing some work in our garage and my mother-in-law came to live with us. We had a lot of extra things in the house and a lot of adjustments to make, and so things were a little confused for us. So I got some shelves that you can put up that you can hang stuff on and put things up on top of, and I put four of those up in the garage, and I got some tool chests and I put some things in there, and I'm trying to straighten things out, and I made some pretty good progress.
Women aren't any better with garages than they are with cars, by the way, just in case you wondered. So I gave my wife one little section. I said, here, this shelf here, you can put anything you want on that shelf. She thought it was sort of unfair, but it's about as much as I get in the closet, so it's, you know, it's kind of reasonable. I actually get a larger percentage than that. And you know what I'll do? I'll get it all nice and have it fixed up and everything's where it belongs. And you know what I do? I go out and look at it. You wouldn't do that, would you? When it's all done, I go out and just look at it. Just like I said, I did that. I accomplished that. I got that done.
That, and so that's the so many miles and so many hours and so many miles per gallon. And that's how what makes us feel good. Women tend to base their sense of significance and well-being on relationships and feelings. I've heard my wife talking on the phone with her sister. And I've heard her say this was an actual conversation. I don't think I'm exaggerating it very much. And maybe not all. I heard her say, oh no, Kathy. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, that's just terrible. Kathy, really, I'm sorry. And I'm wondering who died. And she gets up and says, how much time? She said, oh, Kathy was making a cake for this deal and it fell. Now, I got to be, making a cake and it fell, so I bought one at the grocery store. But when, oh, no, this is a big deal. Relationships and feelings. Women want to know how you feel, and they feel bad for it. That's not that men are non-emotional, but we want to accomplish. We want to have some marker. We want to have some thing we can see. This is what I got done. Next thing, this is really important, the second emotional difference. Men need to solve problems alone. Did you know that men very seldom ask for advice? Once in a while, we get really stuck. We think we'll figure it out. We don't have GPS. You shouldn't have GPS in your car. Now you have two women telling you what to do. You'll find it. It'll be there. It's over here somewhere. I'm going the right direction by the compass. I'm not sure if I passed it or not, but I'm going the right direction. Somebody said that the reason it took Moses 40 years to get across the wilderness was that even back then, men would not stop and ask for directions. Somebody said if the three wise men had been three wise women, they would have gotten directions, arrived early, had the manger cleaned out and a casserole ready when Mary and Joseph got there. Men like to do it alone. My brother-in-law bought a big concrete bird bath fountain for his wife, my wife's sister. And Chrissy liked it. And so I said, hey, where'd you get that? And he told me it was. He said, hey, that thing's really heavy. You're going to have somebody help you. Anybody guess what that meant? I put it in the car all by myself. I took it out of the car all by myself. I put it up in the yard all by myself. When it was time to take it down for the winter, I put it in the shed all by myself. I went to the chiropractor all by myself. I can do that. I'll get it done. I've moved dressers upstairs all by myself. You know, I didn't need any help. We can get it done. It'll take 4 hours and break three pictures, but I can get it done. Men are like that. Women like to involve other people in their problems. And they're caring and loving and nurturing when they do that. And so that's why women are often saying to men, well, honey, why don't you do this? Well, you could do this. We could try that. I'll talk to you about that in a little bit. Number three, under pressure, men tend to withdraw. They get quiet. Under pressure, women tend to talk. Talking makes women feel better. Not men. The Indians had a saying that said, when your husband goes into the cave, do not chase him, or the dragon that lives in the cave may breathe fire on you. Those are facts. Now, like all general statements, they are generally correct. Some women are more this way and less this way. Some men are more this way and less this way, and there's a range of normal. Okay, you're not weird if you're a little more or a little less one way than the other. But that brings some difficulties. Number two is the difficulties, and letter A is different expectations. Now, here's what we think, especially ladies are like this. We think if our partner loves us, then our partner is going to respond the way we do because we love them. And they're going to like what we like. And so what happens is men are wanting women to treat them like they want to be treated. Women are wanting men to treat them like they want to be treated. And each of them treating the other the opposite of the way they need to be treated. So the woman likes to talk. The husband has a problem. She talks. She thinks it helps him. It helps her.
Women love to talk to their friends and talk to their family, and it makes them feel better when they're done talking about their problems, talking about the little things that went wrong. So here's a few difficulties in the expectations. Man offers solutions. Women expect sympathy. I told you, men don't ask for advice. Men seldom talk about their problems. I'm fine. You'll be okay. It's all right. My dad and I were working one night. I was painting, and he was trimming out a house. The dad was in evangelism then, and when he wasn't working, he worked for the same construction company that I worked for while I was in college. And it was when electric miter saws had first come out. And he was using the electric miter saw, and I heard dad say, "Well, that's it. I've had enough. I got to quit. I'm getting tired." That wasn't like my dad. And I thought, what's going on? I went over there. He had sliced the end of his thumb off. And he said, "Yeah, they can commit mistakes. You better go home." You have to thumb off, and we went home. Dad didn't say, "Oh, no, look at this. Lots of little place. Don't you do it?" No. It's fine. I'll be all right. He cut the end of his finger off on a skill saw one time. It didn't have a guard on the blade, and he was cutting some lattice, and he cut the end of his finger off. And Dad said, "Well, you know, I had that finger almost 70 years. And then he'd say, "I have the longest finger in the world. It has no end." Dad wasn't looking for sympathy. He's just ready to wrap up his thumb and go home. He didn't want to say, "Oh, that must really hurt. Oh, that's terrible. I'm so sorry." He just wanted to wrap the thumb up and get in the car and go back home. Now, so here's what happens. But men seldom talk about their problems. They do for two reasons. They do if they want to blame somebody. "I've been around time. That stupid driver in front of me is going 50 in a 45. Anybody knows in Texas you go 60 in a 45. You're not supposed to go 50 in a 45. We would blame somebody. Or if we really, really need advice, we want a solution. "Look, I've had this carburetor with no carburetor anymore. I had this thing apart for 3 days. I can't get it back together. And you got any idea how to put it back?" We really get stuck. We'll ask somebody for some help. So women, they talk about their problems because it makes them feel better. So you come home from work and you say, and you didn't take Brother Gray's excellent advice and call first and find out what kind of frame of mind she was in and what her needs were. And you come home from work and you say, "Honey, how you doing?" And she says, "Oh, man, it's an awful day. It was terrible. The kids did this and then they did that and then this happened and that happened." And the way a man's mind works, he immediately finds a solution for a problem. You'll say, "Well, sweetheart, why don't you just handcuff him and put him in the basement?" Biblical solution like that. Now, get this, guys. Your wives don't do this on purpose. This is not reasoned out. Remember, they think intuitively. Now, this is an instinctive thing. But here's what's going on there. If they take your solution, then the conversation ends. And they're not done talking. Because they don't feel better yet. They may not feel better until they've talked for another 30 or 40 or more minutes. So they instinctively will tell you some reason your solution won't work. "It won't work. We don't have a basement." Some silly thing like that. And so you'll find another solution. Well, then lock them up in the upstairs bedroom. And you're still not done talking, so you have another reason instinctively. That doesn't work. And here's what the man gets to thinking after a while. He thinks, "Oh, she's blaming me for this." You ever felt that way? Your wife's telling you all the bad things went wrong. You get the feeling that somehow she thinks it's your fault. You know, that's just because of the way your mind works and her mind works. She's looking for sympathy. Now, I got to tell you something. I learned this and I thought, boy, that's great. And that's going to really help. And I came home, my wife was telling me all the things that went bad. And I offered sympathy and I said, "Oh, that must have really been frustrating for you." And I thought she would be so thrilled and understood. And she'd melt into my arms and appreciate that. And she said, "It was." And she went on to tell me how frustrating it was and why it was frustrating and how badly frustrating it was. All right. So number one,
Women offer solutions, men offer solutions, women expect sympathy. Number two, women expect reassurance. And men offer resolution. Man's trying to solve the problem. The woman's wanting to be loved and to be cared for. Number three, women expect to improve men. And men expect to fix women. It's not the same thing. Let me start with the men first. How many of you men, don't raise your hand, have ever thought, my wife's just not thinking correctly about that situation? I said don't raise your hand. I guess raise your coffee cup, it's all right. It's like, what do you mean? How can you think that's not right? And so what we do is we tell them the right way to think. We think they're like a car. You open the hood, you take out the bad part, you put in the good part, and it runs just fine. And so we say, you shouldn't think like that, you should think like this. Well, that helps, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, as soon as he says that, it's, oh my, why didn't I say that? Now you're right. Yeah. We just say, we fix it. We just tell them it's the way it is. Women aren't like that. Women like to improve things. You put any of the ladies here in this beautiful room and say this is going to be your dwelling place for the next 3 years, and they'll all want to do something a little different. They like to gradually make it better. They want to put their imprint on it. And, you know, we're at that stage now. We've got to do a lot of updating in our house. We've been there 22 years. And we've replaced the carpet once, and the counters once, and the sink once, and the stove is... my wife wants another stove after a mere 22 years. I got her the stove she wanted when we moved in. It was a Jen Air. And I don't know what that means, but she wanted a Jen Air. It was more money. And now, for a mere 22 years later, she thinks there are better stoves out there than she could have. And we're on our second or third refrigerator. But women like to... They like to improve things. They like to make them nicer. They like to make them better. Now, you guys would never be like that. Well, maybe your truck, you would be like that. Or maybe your motorcycle, you'd be like that. But not the house. Well, so here's what happens. A lady is always trying to suggest things to her husband that will help him be better. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, it might be about driving, might be about dressing, might be about the way they talk or the way they behave. They're trying to improve them. Just a little thought before I get into the next session next time about what my suggestions are you do about this. Ladies, that improvement deal, how's that been working? Huh? You married how long? He's how much better? Because of your suggestions? One of the things I'll say you later on, say to you later on, you just got to love them like they are. And Brother Grace said God loved us while we're sinners. He didn't love us after we got straightened out. He loved us while we're a mess. He'll love people like they are. So be careful about that. Women expect to improve men. Men expect to fix women. And then, let her be, there are different expressions. Women express feelings and men express facts. So a lady will say to her husband, you never talk to me. And her husband says, I'm talking to you right now. How can you say I never talk to you? That's provably false. Now, she's feeling like she would like to spend more time with you. Let me tell you something. The fact that your wife wishes you were around more is not bad. That is good. You want her to say, honey, don't you have another job you can get? It's been 2 days since you cut the grass. Why don't you go out there and try it again? The woman will say, you never spend any time with me. Well, I'm spending time with you right now. You're someplace else right now. Nope. Really, this is me. Live and in the flesh. So, I'm gonna run through this last part of it real quickly here. I'll go ahead and finish it up. So let me give you these directions. Rome number three, the directions. Six suggestions for men based on these physiological, emotional differences. And
5 suggestions for women. Men, number 1, listen to your wife with empathy. That is, you try to feel what she is feeling. Try to put yourself in her position. Hey, you want a good exercise, guys? Stay home with the kids all day sometime. You might have an idea why she wants to talk. You might have an idea why she's bothered by some things after a while. All right, just try that. Listen to your wife with empathy. Number 2, do many small things, not just a few big things. Brother Gray said, call and text throughout the day. I one time, and my wife was not asking for this, she wanted to get a new sewing machine, or a sewing machine, and I found a place, was on a road that was under construction, having a hard time getting anybody to come to shop there, and had a great deal. I bought her the best sewing machine they had. It sewed embroidery and all kinds of stitches. It changed the oil on your car. It would, you know, load the refrigerator for you. It was a great sewing machine. And I bought her a serger. And I had this idea that was such, and it was a lot of money for me at that time. And I was not sure how I was going to pay for it. It was big, big expense. And probably, well over a month's salary for that sewing machine and the serger back then. And I had this idea that's going to buy me credit for a long time. You know, it'll be all right if I work late. It'll be all right if I got some extra meetings. It'll be all right if I forget to take the trash out. And she really liked it, but she didn't ask for that. She didn't want that. It's more important that you not only do the big things, you do a lot of small things. Number 3, ask for and value her counsel. Ask her advice. I have a friend who was just a year older than to be in my youth group when I was a youth pastor. His girlfriend, who's now his wife, was in my youth group. He was always quite the entrepreneur. When he was 18 years old, he was driving a Cadillac, sold concessions at the circus his father ran. And he's been in all kinds of stuff. He's quite wealthy, but he came at a time in his life, he'd been in the video game business when that was really, you know, Pac-Man and Asteroids and those games was a big deal, Space Invaders. And then the Atari people came out and they got him at home and it wasn't such a big deal to have the arcade stuff. And he really lost a lot of money. So he said, look, what I'm doing is I'm borrowing money from my friends. I'm paying them 50% APR, annual percentage rate. And I'm buying out businesses and people that are going out of business and I'm selling them. And so I said, well, let me check on it. And I said, honey, we could give $8,000 to Bill Voorhees, but we had to borrow the $8,000. And I said, he'll pay us $12,000 back at the end of the year. And I said, there is a risk to it. She said, what's the risk? I said, the deal hinges entirely on the integrity and character of Bill Voorhees. Oh, she said, then I'd do it. And we did it. And we made good money on it. Later on, a man, and it's a marvelous answer to prayer, I won't take time to tell you about it, man drove up from Georgia, put in an in-ground swimming pool for us at a previous house, and we had the money to pay for it because I'd done that deal with Bill Voorhees. And now that was my wife's intuition. That was her feminine judgment. She was exactly right. Later on, my dad was living in our area, and he and I decided we'd start buying rental houses together. And my wife said, honey, I don't think you should do that. I said, why not? She said, you don't have time for that. I said, no, it's okay, sweetie. I talked to my dad. I said, look, but see, my dad didn't have any money. And I didn't have any money, so we had the basis of a perfect partnership. But I had really good credit, and so I said, I'll get all the money and you do all the work. And Dad said, great. I said, so it's okay, I've already set that up. No, I said, your dad would not go do the work on those houses and not expect you to be with him. And you don't have time to do that. I said, no, it'll be fine. So my dad and I start looking for houses. He comes back and said, hey, I found this house down there. He said, it needs a roof, but you and I can put that on in 2 or 3 days. I said, Dad, I thought I was going to get all the money. You're going to do all the work. He said, oh, yeah. My wife was totally illogical, completely intuitive, and entirely correct. And my dad and I never bought any houses together. He bought the houses. I bought houses. That's what I do for my retirement. I don't have Social Security. But, man, she was right. Now, ladies, do not go out of here and say, Brother Lett said you have to do what I tell you. I said, ask for and value her counsel.
Number four, appreciate her motive when you cannot appreciate her message. Sometimes I'd be busy and Chrissy'd say, honey, when's it going to ease up? And when are you going to be home more? And I got a little frustrated. I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to do. And I think this is the will of God. And that she's not understanding. And then I thought, hey, this is good. My wife wants me home. She likes me around the house. That's a positive thing. Number five, offer support before solutions. First thing is to say, oh my, that's terrible. Oh my goodness, you must have felt really awful. Oh, what did he do then? Oh no, how'd you take care of that? And then maybe you can say, do you want any ideas on how to handle this? And she'll probably say no. Well, she may say yes. But mainly she wanted to know how she felt. Number six, accept her as she is. Don't try to adjust her to what you wish she was. I was asked by a young man one time, what do you do to teach and to train and to develop your wife? He was interested in a young lady in our church. And I said, almost nothing. And I looked at him, I said, you listen to me. Don't you ever marry anybody you're not willing to love just like she is for the rest of your life. And he started dating that young lady. And she was willing to give him a chance. She's a nice young lady. And I didn't think it was a good deal, but, you know, they were going to explore it. And one day he's out to lunch with her, and he said, what book of the Bible teaches loyalty the most? She said, I don't know. Well, he said, you got to answer. Well, she said, I don't know. He said, if you're going to be with me, you're just going to have to answer, live or die, that's how it's going to be, that's how I am. And she said, well, I'm not saying you're wrong then, but that would mean that you should be with somebody else. And he immediately changed his tune. Oh, no, I didn't mean that, but that was enough. She gave him his walking papers, that was it. That was the end of it. He was trying to change her. He was trying to make her something else. She was bashful. She was shy. She didn't want to answer questions and then be wrong. And he was just trying to tell her how smart he was. She wouldn't have thought of the book of Ruth, but he would have said the book of Ruth. So accept her as she is. Don't try to adjust her to what you think you wish she was. Women, five things for you. Number one, and by the way, ladies, I know you're not going to do this, but if you could only do one, I'd really wish you'd do this one. If you want to change a lot of things in your marriage and make them better, I'd really appreciate it if you'd do this. Your husband would be so happy if you do this. Husbands, don't ever expect this to happen. It's not going to happen. But I'm going to say it anyway. Do not give unsolicited advice. What I mean by that is do not give unsolicited advice. You say, what if? Yeah, that's what I meant. Do not give unsolicited. Yeah, but in this, yeah, right. Do not give unsolicited advice. Remember, women like to help each other and they like to give each other ideas. And, you know, if you use this in the recipe, it'll make this better. If you put this in the soap, it's going to make the clothes better. They share that together. Your husband doesn't like it. My wife knows how to get to every store in Saginaw from every other store in Saginaw. And she's got good ways to do it and avoid the lights and the traffic and all that stuff. And so I'll be taking her shopping and she'll say, honey, if you cut back here and go around here and, you know, turn at the dumpster, you can get there this much quicker. And now, you ladies, this is how we are. And this is not a compliment to us. When you say that to us, it makes us think you think we're stupid. We hear, hey, dummy, you don't know how to drive. You know how to get there. You don't mean that. You just want to be helpful. But we're too immature and too undeveloped to accept that. So just realize that's how it is. So I said to her, sweetie, I know how to get there. I may not know the way you know, and I may not go the best way, but I know how to get there. So make a deal. If I want to ask you a better way to get there, I'll ask you. And once in a while I did it. I think I did it once. That's what I said, once in a while. It was a while and I did it once. But if I don't ask, she's just going to get there the way I know. And my wife was, she's not mean, she's not rebellious, she was just in disbelief. She said, but if I knew a better way, then you know, wouldn't you want to know it? I said, no. She couldn't comprehend it. This level of immaturity was hard for her to grasp. And she said, but if I were driving and you knew a better way, I'd want you to tell me.
I said, good. When you're driving, if I know a better way, I'll tell you. When I'm driving, if I know a better way, don't tell me. Does that make sense? I'm not asking you to make sense. I'm asking you to dwell with us according to knowledge. Number two, do not follow your husband into the cave. When he withdraws, don't try to make him talk. Don't keep asking him questions. Just let him be. He'll come out of it after a while. He may watch a football game. You see, a man likes to solve a problem by himself. And one of the ways he deals with what he doesn't know what to do is just kind of go into a shutdown mode for a little bit. And then maybe he'll be thinking about it. Maybe an idea will come to him. Maybe he'll come out and do it after a little bit. But you don't want to keep talking about it right now. It's not time in his mind to talk. A man likes to put a problem in the crock pot and let it simmer for a day. You don't want to always deal with it right away. So don't follow him in the cave. Number three, make it clear you do not blame your husband for the problem you are describing. Make it clear you do not blame your husband for the problem you are describing. Honey, I know this is not your fault. I know there's nothing that you could do about it. I just wanted you to know how I felt about this. See, men want to help. Men like to rescue the damsel in distress. They like to start the stalled car. They like to pick up the heavy thing. They like to open the door. Men like to do that. They like to feel like they're part of the solution, but they don't like to feel like they're the problem. All right? So, because men only talk about their problems if they want to blame somebody or get some advice to solve it, if you have to talk about something, sweetheart, I'm not blaming you for this. I just want you to know what I felt about this and how this went. Maybe you can't do anything about it, but I just want you to understand my heart on that. Number four, make your requests short, direct, and non-manipulative. Short. Did you hear that word? Sweetheart, would you please take out the trash? That's a good request. Honey, you think you get the trash out this week? The health department was by last week. Neighbors said there was a strange smell from our house. I've asked you 17 times. It has been 4 weeks since you've taken out the trash. Do you think maybe this week? You just guaranteed you'll be the site of the next dump in your town. No. Make them short, direct, and non-manipulative. Don't ask could, ask would. Could indicates a question about his ability. Would indicates a question about his will, his volition. And number five, put things in perspective for your house, for your spouse. If you're having a rough time, you're discouraged, just say to him, sweetie, I love you and I'm happy to be married to you and everything's great. It's just this little area that kind of bugs me and maybe you can help me with it. When I teach on communication and marriage, I always say, own the problem. A man would like to help you solve your problem. He doesn't want to feel like he is your problem. All right? I heard about an old couple, Uncle Bill and Aunt Teresa. And they had been married for a long time. They married later in life and never had children. They had a niece or nephew who was always just in awe of how wonderfully Uncle Bill and Aunt Teresa got along. How sweet they were to each other. How good their relationship was. And so, this relative was going to go visit, and they thought, you know, I'm going to try to ask him what was the secret. Now, they knew that every time Uncle Bill went to the bakery, he got cinnamon buns. And they knew that every time Aunt Teresa went to the bakery, she got glazed donuts. So they went to the bakery, got some glazed donuts and some cinnamon buns. And they set them on the table. When they set them down, when she set them down, Uncle Bill reached over and took a glazed donut. Aunt Teresa reached over and took a cinnamon bun. See, when they went to the bakery, they didn't get what they liked. They got what the other person liked. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Philippians chapter 2. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Did you know that in Ephesians 5, before it says, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands, it says, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. When you get those verses in Philippians, nothing through strife, nothing through vainglory, in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. forget what the other person likes when you go to the bakery. You go a long way to a happy marriage. Father, thanks for the good truths that we've heard from Genesis tonight.